All right, we're ready for chapters 9 through 12 of Leviticus. Let's review where we are, where we're going, where we've been, and then we're going to go back to chapter 7 for a moment here in just a little bit if you want to be turning there. This is our outline of the book. We're into the second section according to this outline. We've looked at the offerings and the sacrifices. We mentioned last time we kind of got across that hump of the details of those sacrifices and getting into maybe a little clearer, more understandable matters, at least more memorable matters. And we're talking about the priesthood here, and then we'll get into daily laws for living concerning clean and unclean things, starting with chapter 11. This is Wiersbe's outline as he deals with the principles of God's provision for sin. We're in the priesthood. We'll move into the holy nation starting in chapter 11 here in just a moment. Chapter 1, what was it about? All right, dealt with burnt offerings. Chapter 2, grain offering. 3, peace offering. Chapter 4, sin offering. Chapter 5, trespass offering and restitution. And chapter 6 continues restitution and offerings. Chapter 7, more offerings and eating blood. And that completed that first section of the offerings in chapters 1 through 7. 8 was dealing with, consecration of Aaron and his sons. In other words, they are appointed, they're put in place, and ready to roll. And that's where we are tonight in chapter 9 beginning. All right, I was asked a question last time after class that I thought worthy of going back and taking a look at it. Look at chapter 7, if you will. And at verse 20, see the same thing mentioned in verse 21, and you see it again mentioned in verse 25, and then again at verse 27, that one who did thus and so, if they failed to follow the pattern of God, they should be cut off from his people. And honestly, I hadn't done much study on that phrase as to what that phrase actually means. There are other occasions in the Old Testament where they would be put outside the camp, for example, for a period of time. And on the surface, it may seem like that's what this is talking about. As the phrase is used, it can refer to extinction in the sense that that person could and would become childless. Let's turn over to Leviticus 20 just to get a sampling of this. Leviticus 20, we're going to talk about Leviticus 20 more in just a moment. But in 17 and 18, the thing I want you to see, and I'm not going to read every word in interest of time, and you can go back and study this on your own. But one who sees the nakedness of another's, of like his father or his mother or his sister, etc., the text says in verse 17 that he'll be cut off in the sight of his people. Verse 18 says essentially the same thing. So both verses say that they'll be cut off from their people. But drop down to verse 20 and 21, the same principle is stated, one who sees the nakedness will die childless. I don't take that to be two different things, but that seems to be a definition of what it means to be cut off from their people. So it can refer, and does seemingly in that text, refer to they will become childless, and so in that sense, they're cut off from their people. It most often, though, refers to death. And let me give you some examples of that. Genesis 9 in verse 6, God cuts off flesh by the flood. Well, what did he do with the flood in cutting off flesh? Well, he drowned them in the flood. So it had reference to death. He put them to death by the flood. But the phrasing, same phrase, is used in Leviticus 7 that they're cut off by the flood, by the waters. Leviticus 17 in verse 4, you might turn there just for a moment, and you see the same phrase that we found here in our text. In Leviticus 7. And so in chapter 17 and in verse 4, we see the same phrase is used again, that he'll be cut off from among his people. Now the New King James has a footnote there at verse 4, verse 9, verse 10, that means to put to death. Now I realize footnotes are supplied by man, and so that's their comment. The translators thought that's what that means. perhaps because of Exodus, we'll get to in a moment, and because of Genesis 9. All right, let's go further. Leviticus 26:20 talks about destroying the livestock. Well, how do you destroy livestock? Well, you kill livestock. Same word as our word cut off. It's translated destroy. The same thing again in Exodus 9 and concerning the frogs, destroying the frogs. Well, what was the idea of destroying the frogs? Why didn't you just isolate them over here, but you kill them? That was what the desire was, to kill and destroy the frogs. Same word as our phrase cut off. Let's go to Exodus 31. This is probably the best commentary on that phrase, Exodus 31 and in verse 14. And Barnes argues here that being put to death and or dying and being cut off are two distinct things. I think he's wrong about that. I think that the text is showing they're the same thing. So Exodus 31, 14, that you shall keep the Sabbath, therefore it shall be holy to you. Everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death. For everyone who does any work, and that person shall be cut off from among his people. I don't think that's showing two distinct things. You profane the Sabbath, you'll be put to death. You work on the Sabbath, that is profaning the Sabbath, you'll be cut off from the people. Do you see the commentary there? That it means to be put to death. Well, I see the same thing in Leviticus 20, 2 through 5. Now, that's the same context that we dealt with over here, except a little earlier. But they seem to be used interchangeably, and I'm not going to take the time to go to Leviticus 20. Look at verses 2 to 5. It seems that being put to death and being cut off is the same thing. Now, the context doesn't specify how they're cut off. An example, chapter 10 of our text tonight. Nadab and Abihu. It doesn't say they were cut off, but they didn't follow the direction of God, and they were cut off. Well, how were they cut off? They were cut off by being killed. They died. A case in point. Now, that connects more with Numbers than it does Leviticus 7. Now, it could be argued that this Leviticus 20, 17, 18, and 20, and 21 actually refers to death. That's the sense in which they die childless. You're going to die before you have children. So you could well argue that that too has reference to cutting them off by death. Make sense? Maybe. I'll just leave it at that. So I was asked, and we several of us talked about that after services, and what do you think that means? And I think that gets to the heart of what that's all about. All right, let's go to question number one. What's chapter 9 about? All right, yeah, here's the work. They start offering sacrifices, but the point is, this is where they, for lack of a better term, the priesthood starts rolling. The work of the priesthood begins here. So God gives instructions to Aaron and the children of Israel to bring their sacrifices. That's the first thing that's going to happen. We'll subdivide that in a moment. There's the offerings for Aaron, there's the offerings for the people, and then the glory of the Lord appears. And there's a point to be made about that, of what that means, and we'll see all of that here in just a moment. All right, let's get underway. Let's talk about these instructions. They have been appointed. The blood has, they've been sprinkled. The tabernacle has been sprinkled. They are officially priests now. So, in order to do their work, they have to be cleansed, and sacrifice has to be made. So God gives instructions for that. Now, the eighth day, what's the significance of the eighth day mentioned at verse 1? It's the day after the 7 days of consecration, yeah, that we just saw at the end of chapter 8. That Moses called Aaron and his sons together, and he tells them for to do what? Take a young bull for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering. We've already been through what those are, so we're not going back through that. And to speak to the children of Israel. So now beginning at verse 3, here's what's to be done for the children of Israel, for the other people, not the priesthood, but for the people. There's to be a goat as a sin offering and a lamb. Both are to be the first year without blemish for a burnt offering. Now, verses 4b through 6 tells the reason for that. Now, we could well argue, and I put reason/result. We could well say, well, because God commanded it, and that's true. But there's something else to be said at verses 4b through 6. You get the offering from the people. You take the offering for Aaron. And here's what's going to happen. Here's the reason or the result. What is it? The Lord will appear to you. You might highlight that at verse 4. For today the Lord will appear to you. You say, well, if you haven't read ahead, and this is your cursory reading of this, and you haven't got to the end of the chapter, you don't know how the story ends. It's going to be told at the end of the chapter how that happens. So verse 24 is your key to interpreting how the Lord will appear to them. All right, verse 6. After Moses had commanded them to become and the people came near the door, he said, this is the thing the Lord has commanded. And here again, you might highlight or underline, the glory of the Lord will appear to you. You do this, you follow the sacrifices, you do what you want, and the Lord's going to appear. And that's going to be significant. That's going to make a point. It's going to confirm something. We'll get to that here in a second. All right. Now then, so you might just flag verse 4, verse B. Now, here's the offering for Aaron. So here's the instructions at verse 7. What instructions are given? Offer a burnt offering. Yes, and make atonement for yourself and for the people. And offer it for the people and make atonement. Before the work of priesthood can be done, atonement needs to be made. Does that make sense? We've seen that principle in Exodus. We saw it early in the book of Leviticus. Then there is the sin offering in verses 8 through 11, that he takes the calf and he kills it. I want you to pay close attention to this because this is going to help us in interpreting the end of chapter 10. That Aaron killed the calf of the sin offering, and the sons of Aaron brought the blood to him and dipped the finger in the blood, put it on the horns of the altar, and poured the blood around the base of the altar. And what did he do with the fat and the kidneys and the fatty lobe, etc.? He burned it. And then verse 11, key point for something later on, the flesh and the hide he burnt with fire outside the camp. So he had an offering. This is for Aaron. He takes the sin offering and he offers it. And since the blood did not go into the tabernacle, it could perhaps be eaten, but they took it and they burned it. Remember that distinction we made earlier? We'll flag that a little bit later in chapter 10 toward the end, a difficult section in chapter 10. Now, let's move on to I'm trying to get to some more difficult matters. This is pretty simple. We have the people's offering. There's the sin offering, the burnt offering, the grain offering, the peace offering, and the wave offering. So let's flag those as we go through. At verse 15, they brought the people's offering. And you might underline at verse 15, there was a goat for a sin offering. They killed it. And he brought the burnt offering, verse 16. Where's the grain offering mentioned? Verse 17 mentions the grain offering. What's next? Peace offering at verse 18. And then they take concerning the peace offering, they presented him with the blood and he sprinkled it all around the altar and then burned the rest. And they put the fat on the breast and he burned the fat on the altar. Now then verse 21, there is a wave offering. Now, when he had done that, look at verse 22 now. What does verse 22 say Aaron did? Lifted his hands up and he blessed them and came down from offering, which suggests that this idea, I take that, let me get ahead of myself right here to this picture, that this offering, I mean this altar of burnt offerings, was raised up so that he was up making the offering and then he comes down from that. Make sense? I think that's the significance of his having come down in our text. But I'm interested at verse 22 that he blessed the people. So not only are the priest, Aaron and his sons, getting ready to do their work, but the people are getting ready for them to do their work, making sacrifices on behalf of the people. Now, something historical is about to happen at verse 23 and 24. So we get to perhaps the major point of the chapter. Look at verse 23 and 24 now. The glory of the Lord appeared, and this is where the priesthood work begins. Then Moses and Aaron went into the tabernacle of meeting and came out and blessed the people. Now let's stop there. For the first time in history, this is historical, for the first time a high priest has gone into the tabernacle. Moses has been in before, but he wasn't the high priest, was he? Aaron has just been made high priest, but he hadn't been in yet as high priest. Maybe he went in the building of that, but he hasn't been in as high priest. So for the first time in history, a high priest went into the tabernacle. That's history right there. That's historical. And our high priest is in heaven in the most holy place, parallel to what Aaron was and did. And you say, I'd like to trace the history of that. Here's where it began. Does that make sense? This is historical right here. Now, look at verse 23. Then the glory of the Lord appeared to all the people. You say, I still don't know in what form. That's told in the next verse. The next verse is going to tell us, in the form of a fire. And so you might flag at verse 23, verse 24, which is obviously the next verse, and verse 4 and verse 6. This is what verse 4 and verse 6 was talking about. So once they made the sacrifices, God said, make all these sacrifices for Aaron, and then make the sacrifices for the people. And when you get through, then the Lord's going to appear to you. They did, and the Lord appeared. But we still haven't got the description of that yet. So let's go to verse 24. What happened at verse 24? Fire came from before the Lord and consumed the burnt offering and the fat on the altar. Now they had been reading instructions about making offerings, and they have been making offerings that day on the eighth day. This is a busy day, by the way, because we're still on this day when we get into chapter 10 and finish chapter 10. There's a lot going on this day. They've been making sacrifices, and the altar of burnt offering is burning up the sacrifices. They have not seen anything like this. Fire coming down from heaven and consuming that. It was overwhelming. What was the reaction of the people? When they saw it, they shouted and fell on their faces. Now let's flag a parallel concept here. Let's go over to 2 Chronicles for a moment. 2 Chronicles chapter 7, I think, is my verse. And verses 1 to 3. The tabernacle has just been, I'm back over, I haven't gone to 2 Chronicles in my conversation yet. I'm there physically, but I'm not there in conversation. I'm still over here in Leviticus. The tabernacle has just been established, just been erected. The priesthood has just been put in place, and this fire came down and consumed. Now let's go over to 2 Chronicles. What's going on in 2 Chronicles 27? This is at the dedication, not of the tabernacle, but the temple. Yeah. And Solomon had finished in praying, and fire came down from heaven and consumed the burnt offering and the sacrifices, and the glory of the Lord filled the temple. And the priests could not enter the temple, for because of the glory of the Lord had filled the Lord's house. And all the children of Israel saw how the fire came down and the glory of the Lord, they bowed their faces to the ground on the pavement and worshipped and praised God, saying, for he is good and his mercy endures forever. Sounds familiar? Yeah, very familiar. It's exactly what had happened over here at the dedication of the tabernacle. All right. Now, here's a couple of things that I'm learning from that. One, I'm learning that is a confirmation of the Aaronic priesthood. If that doesn't prove that Aaron has God's approval as a high priest, he goes into the tabernacle. He's just been appointed as high priest, been anointed by Moses. He goes into the tabernacle, he comes back out, and fire comes down from heaven and consumes the sacrifice that he had just offered. And the people are amazed and they bow down. And if that doesn't confirm the Aaronic priesthood. And so if anybody had any question, I wonder why Aaron got picked. I wonder if he's the right man. I wonder if somebody else wouldn't have been, maybe Moses would have been a better high priest or someone else. The question should be over, shouldn't it? What else do you learn from that story?
And that's
All right. Good connection. I notice something else going on in this text that I learned a very practical thing about inference and conclusions. In other words, God did not shout from heaven and say, I am letting you know that I'm confirming the priesthood of Aaron. But he did something, and they were to draw some conclusion. It meant something to them. Or why did God do that? It's not just that, watch this, I'm going to do something amazing, and let's see what they do. There's a reaction God wants from that. And they were amazed, and they bowed down, but they're not just amazed at the power of God. They learned something from that. They were to deduce something from that. And God didn't spell out the details, but they were to understand something from that. It was a confirmation of the Aaronic priesthood. Does that make sense? And if that doesn't, is that that's not the conclusion, then pray tell me what conclusion were they to draw from that? It is a confirmation of the Aaronic priesthood. All through Old and New Testament, there is the principle of inference. All right, so the priesthood is underway. They are making sacrifice now, and things go south real quick. So let's go to chapter 10. Chapter 10 deals with what? Nadab and Abihu, primarily. Is there more? Obviously. But Nadab and Abihu and their death. This is that same day. This is still the eighth day. And so this is not like 3 weeks, 3 years, 3 months later. This is the same day. This was, you imagine, standing off watching this, this is the first time we've seen a high priest do his work. And here's his sons, Nadab and Abihu, their priest. And when Aaron dies, they may be high priest. One of them will be. This is going to be interesting. So verse 1 and 2, what did they do? All right, they offered, the King James will say, strange fire. The New King James will say profane fire. English Standard, New International will say unauthorized fire. So which is correct? Yes, they all are. Foreign is another word that could be used. That word is translated strange. It can be translated profane. It can be translated unauthorized. It can, when it talks about a foreign person, such as one of the Gentile nation, same word. This was something foreign to God's plan, which he had not commanded them. So it was a profane, strange, foreign, unauthorized fire that God had not authorized. Some have suggested, maybe some conjecture here, they got all excited and thinking, we're now priests, we can do what we wish, and let's get busy and let's start offering. And they didn't follow the instructions. That's the main thing. Now, verse 2, this is interesting in light of what just happened in the previous chapter. What happens now? Absolutely. Fire came from heaven in approval in the previous chapter. Fire comes from heaven in disapproval in chapter 10. Is that interesting? So fire went out from heaven and devoured them, and they died before the Lord. Now I'm understanding a little more about what being cut off from the people meant, though that wasn't used here. Now verse 3 is quite interesting. By the way, if you want to flag some parallel verses that mention this, Numbers 3 and verse 4, we'll get to a little bit later. Not later tonight, but later in our studies. And Numbers 26:61. Numbers 26:61, Numbers 3 and verse 4, talk about Nadab and Abihu offering strange fire. Now Moses reacts to Aaron, and one of the questions at verse 3 that Moses said to Aaron, this is what the Lord spoke saying. And on a cursory reading of that, it sounds like Moses is saying, this is what the Lord just revealed to me. I don't take it that way, though. I think what he's saying is that he says to Aaron, when he sees his sons have died, they're still laying there. Hadn't even had their burial yet. They haven't even removed their bodies. And he goes to Aaron and he says that by those who come near me, this is what God said, by those who come near me, I must be regarded as holy, and before all people I must be glorified. And so where had God said that previous to that? Well, in principle, that's not an exact quotation from a text that we know of. Exodus 19 had made that same point. Parts of Leviticus had made similar points. God wanted to be revered. etc. So I take it that this was something God had already said, and so Moses goes to Aaron and tells him that really this was inexcusable because God had already told us that I was to be revered before the people. And your sons, in essence, did not do that. So what was Aaron's reaction, verse 3? What does that mean? He knew he was right. Stayed quiet about that. He didn't push back. And Aaron knew that what the Lord did was right. And what his sons had done was wrong. Now it gets more interesting. Verses 4 and 5, he calls for cousins of Aaron to come. And what does he tell them to do? All right, before we get that, he calls for them to come near. And verse 4 and 5, carry them out and take them by their tunics and carry them outside the camp. While he's talking to Aaron about God was supposed to be revered, the dead bodies are still laying right there in the courtyard of the tabernacle. That's interesting. This is all the same day, the eighth day. Now then, at verse 6 and 7, this gets even more interesting. What does he say to Aaron and Eleazar and Ithamar? That's two other sons. Don't cover your heads or tear your clothes lest you die. Those were signs of mourning. Do you think Aaron was bothered? You bet. You bet he was bothered. Do you think he was mourning inside? Yeah, there is no doubt. But he tells him, don't cover your head or tear your clothes, but let your brethren, the whole house of Israel, bewail the burning which the Lord has kindled. In other words, fire has broke out and consumed your sons. I take that lest that be interpreted as disapproval of God's action. You've just been put in the priesthood and your sons did it the wrong way. They didn't follow the instructions and you quit and mourn and sit down and on your work and you mourn and you wail and you tear your clothes and you put on your, what is it, the wording you used at verse 6, uncover your heads. You're going to be interpreted as disapproval of what God did. So don't show any sign of mourning. Go on with your work of priesthood. Powerful. Powerful. Now, what I'm learning is allegiance to the Lord is always coming before family. And you shall go out from the door of the tabernacle lest you die, for the anointing oil of the Lord is upon you, and they did according to the word of Moses. What did he just tell him? Other than don't mourn, what did he just tell him? You need to leave the scene for the moment, but you need to go on with your work of being high priest. Boy, y'all are we're quick. Yeah, go on with your work of being a high priest is the idea. You've got a job to do, and don't give any disapproval of what God did. Does that make sense? With family versus God. Exactly. Yeah. With their work of being priest. Yes, ma'am. They couldn't have touched the body. They might have stopped and mourned, but he told them not to do that. Let's pick up at verse 8 now. There's a lot of question as to why God says this here, and I think it's going to be the latter that I'll mention and not the first. Some think that this implies that Moses, or that Nadab and Abihu may have been drunk at the time, or at least drinking, and that's why they did what they did. There is no implication of that. That is only inferred from some because that's the next thing that's mentioned. Now, this is the same day. But I take it more that what is being said in verses 8 through 10 is the Lord is not going to tolerate irreverence. He didn't tolerate it with Nadab and Abihu, and he's not going to tolerate it in the future. So no drinking of intoxicating drinks, etc. This is a grave responsibility. It requires a clear mind. So this is so that you'll be able to do two things. What are they? Verse 10 is one, and verse 11 is another. That you may be distinguished, very good, between holy and unholy and clean and unclean, and teach the people. You can't do that if you don't have a clear mind. You can't do that while drinking the strong drink. Now, beginning at verse 12, here's parts of the sacrifice that can be eaten. I'm going to quickly go through that. He says to Aaron, Moses spoke to Aaron and to Eleazar and Ithamar, the sons who were left, take the grain offering, etc. Verse 12 and 13 talks about what was to be eaten in the holy place. We've already talked about that in chapters 1 through 7. Verses 14 and 15 talks about what could be eaten, the priests could eat with their family. They could take it away from the holy place. I'm not going to go through the details of that. We won't remember by next week. Anyway, it's not that it's unimportant. I'm interested in getting to another point. Now, I'm interested in talking about this rebuke of Eleazar and Ithamar for not eating the sacrifice. That is one of the most difficult sections in the book of Leviticus in my mind. So let's see if we can make some sense of this. That Moses diligently took inquiry of the goat of the sin offering, and there it was burned up. In other words, he goes and checks on this sacrifice, and it has been consumed. And he goes and he is upset at the other sons of Aaron, Eleazar and Ithamar. And he comes to them at verse 17. I take this as based upon Leviticus 6, 24 through 30, which we've recently covered. That he said, why have you not eaten the sin offering since it is most holy? And he said at verse 18, see, its blood was not brought into the holy place. That was one of the distinctions. If the blood was not taken into the holy place, it could be eaten. If it's taken into the holy place, it cannot be eaten. So he said the blood wasn't taken in, so it should have been eaten in the holy place as I commanded. And so he's rebuked them. So let's stop. And what do we know so far? What we know is that Moses found the sacrifice has been burnt. Nobody denies that. It was not eaten. No one denies that. And Moses thinks it should have been eaten, but the sons of Aaron had not eaten it. So Moses rebukes them for that. So Aaron speaks up and he says to Moses, and watch carefully your wording, and we'll check some other translations on this. Aaron said to Moses, look, this day they have offered their sin offering and their burnt offering before the Lord, and such things have befallen me. If I had eaten the sin offering today, would it have been accepted in the sight of the Lord? I don't have time to talk about the multiplicity of interpretations of that. One of the more common ones is this. And that is that he's saying, with all that's befallen me today, my sons were killed. I couldn't have partaken of it in the right mind. I couldn't have eaten of it in the right mind, and so therefore it wouldn't have been accepted. I don't think that's what he's saying. But some have presented, Willis presents that in his little workbook on Leviticus. I think Blackmore, Evan and Marie Blackmore, who's part of the Truth Series, they're those two scholars from, where are they from, Dathan? Australia. They've written on Psalms. If you've got the series, it's on Psalms and the ones on Leviticus. Excellent students. That doesn't mean they're right. Just, I think they're excellent students. That actually what Aaron is defending is that this was no different from another sacrifice where we did not eat that. So let's see if that's not what's being said. Let's go back to verse 19. That Aaron says to Moses, look, this day they, the people that is, have offered their sin offering and their burnt offering before the Lord, and such things have befallen me. You think, well, that's talking about Nadab and Abihu. I don't think he's talking about Nadab and Abihu. I think he's talking about things that he has offered. The New American Standard says, things like these happen to me. The American Standard says the same thing. He's making a comparison between their sacrifice and his sacrifice. In his sacrifice, chapter 9, verse 11, remember I said we'd flag that? We did. They burnt the entire offering. And so it seems like what Aaron is saying is, this sacrifice that they did not eat of is no different from the sacrifice that I offered that we did not eat of. We burnt the whole thing. And so there is no difference. And we are justified in not eating that. And so what makes me think they may be right about that is because when Moses heard that, he was content. Now, I don't think he's saying, I know God told us to do that, but we didn't do that. And then Moses said, okay, that's all right. Where's God's reaction like it was with Nadab and Abihu? Nadab and Abihu did it wrong and they were consumed. And if these other sons did it wrong, why weren't they consumed? And why wasn't Aaron rebuked? I take it that Moses stands corrected in that, that was a sacrifice that was acceptable for you not to eat. Does that make sense? They didn't in chapter 9, verse 11. And I think Aaron is saying, this sacrifice is just like that sacrifice. And when Moses heard that, he was content. So here are the facts that we know. We know that they didn't eat of it. Moses thought they should have. Aaron defended that. And when he got through, Moses was content. And there's not one word from God about his disapproval of that. Now, you've got to harmonize all those points. I think we just did. Check Blackmore for more information. All right. Now, I'd like to open that up for more discussion, but our time is clicking off. We've got two more chapters. Chapter 11, I'm going to go through hurriedly, not because it's unimportant, but because, one, we don't have the time, and number two, this is one of those reference points you'll just come back to later. You won't remember all the details of this. This is one of those reference points, just like some of the sacrifices of chapters 1 through 11. Make sense? So we're talking about the section of things that are clean and unclean. We're going to deal with food in chapter 11. In chapter 12, we're going to deal with a woman in childbirth. We're going to deal with disease, leprosy in chapters 13 and 14. So we're going to talk about clean and unclean things. So here we go. Here's what can and cannot be eaten. For example, at verses 1 to 3 concerning beast, verse 3 is the key. You can eat if it has cloven hooves and chews the cud. There are exceptions like the camel, the rock hadrix, the hare, the swine. Those are unclean. That's why a Jew cannot eat swine. He was labeled as unclean. Are you going to remember all the details of which animal? No, but here's where you're going to go for that. The fish, verses 9 through 12, what was it could be eaten if it has fins and scales? There are other sea creatures and from the rivers and from the ocean that couldn't be eat, and so there's the list for that. Then 13 to 19 are the birds, and so here are a number of birds that couldn't be eaten. And so they are all listed, be it the vulture, the buzzard, the raven, the ostrich, et cetera, the seagull, et cetera, stork. Then there is insects. What was the, they're not to eat insects unless the insect jointed legs above their feet. So they could eat, verse 22, something John ate a lot of, locusts. They could eat locusts and grasshoppers and crickets, they could eat those. Then we move into what is and is not defiled by touching. Quite often we'll come across some reference in the Old Testament later on that he was considered unclean or this one was considered unclean. This is what this is all about. Contact with a dead animal would be unclean. Unclean and creeping things such as a mouse, for example, if it comes in contact with a vessel, that would be unclean. If it fell into the water is unclean unless it was an abundance of water, like into a river or to a pool of water. The whole was not unclean, as you recall that at verse 34. Starting down at verse 39 and 40, we have a dead carcass of a clean animal. So here's a clean animal that you could eat, but if it's dead, it's unclean. Now, I want to get down to verses 40 to 47 because this gets to the heart. The reason for these laws has to do, what one is, their sanitary reasons. But more important than that, it had to do with making a separate and a distinct people. Evidence, look at verse 44. You shall be holy, for I'm holy. Verse 45, you shall be holy, for I'm holy. Where is that repeated in the New Testament? 1 Peter 1, verse 15 and 16. Be holy, for I am holy. Same, God tells us to do the same thing. You need to be holy, set apart, because I'm holy. If you're going to be my servant, you need to be holy. So what was the purpose of these clean and unclean and all the distinctions? And so you say, well, I get confused. Well, if you're a Jew, you had to keep up. I can't touch that animal. I'm to wash this, get rid of this garment, wash this garment, unclean till the evening, etc. What's all that about? It had to do with being distinct and separate from the nations and kept the people from assimilating with the Gentiles. What does that mean? Yeah, just blending in. So as they live in Canaan, they're not just, they shouldn't, they did, but they should not have blended in with the rest of the world. No, we can't eat that. We can't eat swine. We can't touch that. No, we can't be a part of that. You think it's difficult being a Christian telling them, no, I don't go to the dance. No, I can't wear that outfit. No, I can't go to the bar with you. You think it's bad? How have you like to have been a Jew? No, I can't eat that. No, I can't touch that. I can't participate in that funeral. No, I can't. Can't do that. That was God's purpose behind that. Now, quickly, let's get chapter 12. Our time is about gone in about a minute. What we have is the purification of a woman after childbirth. Why should this sound familiar to us? Because of Mary in what chapter? Yeah, Luke chapter 2. We just studied. All right. The point here is, if she has a male child, she is unclean. This is part of the uncleanness. And that she shall be unclean for 7 days. On the eighth day, she will have the male child circumcised. And then she continues for 33 days. So that's 7 plus 33 for 40 days. And then if she has a female child, she's be unclean for 2 weeks. And then continues for how many days? 66, making 80. And then what does she do? Makes an offering of a lamb. And in Mary's case, why didn't she offer a lamb? Couldn't afford it. And she offers 2 turtle doves, which are mentioned here in this context. Make sense? That was the offering for those who were poor. Make sense? So now we understand from Leviticus 12 why Mary did what she did in Luke 2. That's the value of Old Testament knowledge. If we don't have the Old Testament, we come to Luke 2 and we say, I won't have a clue why she did what she did. That doesn't make sense. Well, it does make sense because we've read from Leviticus 12. Making sense? Time is gone. We must stop.